I don't know what went wrong. When I handed over the helm in the dark, wee early hours, we were in a commanding position, stuck stationary in a wind shadow on a bend in the river, just about stemming the tide and going absolutely nowhere. I left clear instructions for Bob and Dudley to overtake loads of boats, and then I got my head down. 2 hours later, when I popped back on deck after dozing fitfully, I took in the scene. We were stuck stationary in a wind shadow on a bend in the river, just about stemming the tide and going absolutely nowhere. It was the same bend. Considering how much noise Bob and Dudley had been making, I'd foolishly imagined that we'd actually been going somewhere. I count this as one of the lighter moments of this year's Three Rivers race on the Norfolk Broads. You see, along with seeing the Taj Mahal, swimming with dolphins, throwing yourself off beachy heads, sticking needles in your eyes, and dying, the Three Rivers race is one of those things you only need to do once in your life. That's why, when Bob Smith invited me back for a second go at the 24-hour Norfolk Broads ordeal, I said no. He took that as yes. Dymo Bob, as he's known on account of all the little labels that festoon his sailfish and add considerable structural rigidity, is a man of precision. He's also something of a Three Rivers specialist. It's a pretty clear statement of serious intent when you've got a skipper who wears a crash helmet. Bob's has the word Bob written on it, embossed in Dymo lettering, along with the instructions front, back, this way up, and to cover all eventualities, other way up. It's difficult to know how best to describe the Three Rivers race. Imagine the chilling Burt Reynolds river thriller Deliverance. Add the scariest elements of Robert Mitchum's Cape Fear, and the brutality of Bridge on the River Kwai, and that gives you absolutely no idea what it's like. Now think of TV's It's a Knockout with the mad cackling laughter of Stuart Hall. Add a touch of Dad's Army and top off with 40 Towers. Imagine yourself condemned to spend 24 hours inhabiting a delirious watery limbo somewhere between the world of Hitchcock's Psycho and a carry-on movie. Now I reckon that gives you some idea. Skipper Bob was on a mission. He's never yet been beaten by sailfish rivals Nigel, John and Guy. This easygoing, ruddy-faced trio aboard Cathy were also on a mission, mostly involving lager. Ostensibly, the challenge of the Three Rivers race is to navigate your way over a 50-mile course to points on the rivers Ant, Bure and Thurne. It sounds simple enough, but to make it more interesting, you're left to choose your own course, and as the rivers are tidal, that involves sums. You also have to lower your mast to shoot three bridges, and that involves panic. And as there are 138 boats taking part, many of them with blooming great bowsprits, it also involves terror. For Bob, it's also something of a grudge match. First, there's his grudge with his sailfish rivals Nigel, John and Guy. Then there's Bob's grudge against all the other boats in the race, all 138 of them. Then there's his grudge with motorboaters, buoys, trees, bridges, swans, ducks, reeds, tides and water. Bob's also got a grudge against the wind, and this year the wind had a grudge against us. I don't know why they're called the Norfolk Broads, because they aren't. And when there are 138 boats thrashing about in narrow confines and all of them convinced they're the stand-on vessel, it's a recipe for total chaos. And this year, just to throw a spanner in the works, there was wind, lots of it, at least to start with. That meant carnage and lots of skewering of boats on bowsprits. Now, Captain Bob's something of a sailfish improver, and you just know he's got a bowsprit in the pipeline. It will be telescopic, at least three times the length of a sailfish, and tipped with anthrax. In the meantime, we had our own secret weapon. Bob's long-term pal, Dudley, who knows absolutely everyone on the Broads. Dudley also has a voice that can be heard in at least three counties, and he put it to good effect. He'd wait until a boat was at a critical point in a manoeuvre, on the precipice of panic, then volley a complex question like, "I say, Gerald, has Gemma chosen her modules yet for second year law? Or, what's the latest on Aunt Gladys's hemorrhoids? Seconds later, the boat would mount the bank, hit a bridge, or get stuck in an overhanging tree. It worked every time. Mind you, we've been having problems of our own. In the gusting winds, we've been rampaging around like a crazy miniature dodgem trapped in a pinball table. It's difficult to say whether we'd hit things or they'd hit us. That's for the lawyers to sort out. But poor Bobcat was a fair bit bruised. On board Cathy, things were going swimmingly. Skipper Nigel had fallen off. Now, John and Guy immediately noticed, A, that Cathy went faster with less weight on board, and B, the lager would go further between just two of them. It was only when Nigel pointed out that Cathy was his boat that they grudgingly let him back on board. Then, as night fell, the wind dropped. I was at the helm as we wafted along, approaching a flotilla of stationary boats. I finessed Bobcat along on the Zephyr, so I like to think. Snuck up on the inside, and then just as I was about to wave so long, suckers, to the stationary boats, we too became stationary. For an hour, we jockeyed and jostled with one another, all going nowhere. It was like sailing in treacle. We even turned back to take a run up and so nearly broke free. But it wasn't to be, and this was only the beginning. We were among a gaggle of boats that had congealed on a bend. With just enough way on to stem the tide, we spent 4 hours sailing but going nowhere. And it was all thanks to another of Bob's inventions. One chap had very sensibly plonked his mud weight overboard. That's what they use for anchors on the Broad. And then taunted us with the delicious sounds of a popping of a cork and the silhouettes of chinking wine glasses in the gentle glow of oil lamps. Bastard. That wasn't an option for us, because Bob, as I mentioned earlier, is something of a sailfish improver and had improvised his own mud weight by pouring cement into an old bleach container. The sea trials had proved less than promising. As there'd been an air pocket, he'd unwittingly invented the world's first floating mud weight. He's already applied for patents and has devised a jingle that goes, "You'll never get stuck in the mud with Bob's bobbing mud weight." At 8:04 in the morning, 19 hours and 49 minutes after we'd started, we arrived back at Horning Sailing Club. Cathy had arrived 30 minutes before to beat Bobcat for the very first time. Well done, lads, but just you wait till next year. Now, the organisers of the Three Rivers race have asked me to point out that next year will be the 50th race, and in all that time, there have been very few confirmed incidences of cannibalism. These days, the rules expressly forbid it, and anyone found eating human flesh would incur a 5-minute penalty for each limb.